Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
Here on 830 WCCO, brought to us by our good friends down in Jordan, Minnesota, that make the best patio furniture in the whole world. That's By the Art Outdoor Furniture. Speaking of great people, Weisenhorn is back with us. Long time no see,
my friend. I know it.
It's good to have you back here.
It's been busy this summer.
It has been. What have you been up to?
Oh,
everything.
Boy, yeah. Attending Japanese beetles.
Is that the biggest story lately?
Well, it is in my neck of the woods. We've been, we have quite a few of them in our display garden, and so we're scratching our heads about it. But yeah, it's a tough thing that we kind of all suffer through, I think, this time of year.
So we'll probably get a few questions.
I'm sure we might,
calls and text messages as
so,
well.
So they've been around a lot longer than I thought. They've been around in Minnesota for a long time, but most recently they became pretty prevalent in about 2011. So.
Well, if you're new to the show, Julie Weisenhorn is with the University of Minnesota, helps us out along with Mary and Teresa from time to time.
The team. Sam, too, sometimes.
And it won't be – and Sam, too. It won't be long till the state fair.
I know it.
It's hard to believe, huh?
I know.
Here again. But that's,
and then summer's over.
And then summer's over. We won't go there. But if you do have a lawn and garden question, you want to jump in as early as you can because, as you know, as Julie knows, we tend to get really busy during this hour. So call us or text Julie. Here is our phone number. We've cleared the line, so you can help yourself. 651-989-9226 or send Julie a text at 81807. 81807. I don't know about how it is in your yard, but we could still use some more rain.
Yeah, it's been pretty dry. We had 2.5 inches, though, the other day. And, you know, Sam, when he talks about lawns, he said you don't need to water your lawns that much. And this time of year, actually, our grasses are cool season grasses. They grow the most in spring and in fall when it's cooler. This time of year, they're actually kind of dormant.
Yeah.
And so doing things like fertilizing right now can put stress on grass plants because it kind of pushes them into growth. And they're really not supposed to be growing at this time of year. So it can actually stress the plants out to try to, you know, change that little bit of tan color that you might have from the dormancy and the dry conditions and try to, you know, crank it up to this big lush green lawn. And then your plants end up getting stressed out by that because they're growing at an unnatural time for them. So It's important to also mow them at 3 inches minimum so that the crowns can be protected by the blades, and that helps to cool them, keeps them, holds in moisture.
So you're saying don't mow short.
Yeah, don't mow short. Don't scalp those lawns. You know, this is not a golf course. and they only do that because you got to get the ball across the green. But, you know, mowing longer and just understanding that grasses are not, this is not the time of year when they look top notch. It's spring and fall that they really look the best for the types that we have.
Okay. You know what? You're right. We're getting questions about
Japanese beetles.
But somebody sent a text, said, please settle a family discussion. How often should you fertilize tomato plants, and what should you use to fertilize them?
Well, there's a lot of products that are specific for tomatoes, and they're tomato fertilizers. I would look at those in particular and then follow the instructions on that. Because that is, and it depends if your tomatoes are in the ground or if they're in containers. If they're in containers, they'll need fertilizer more often because that flushes out.
Dissipates
every time you water, it goes out the bottom. So, but when they're in the ground, it's a little bit different. There's more nutrients there that are resident in your soil. So read the packaging, follow the instructions. You can use a slow release fertilizer, a kind of a pelletized, and just sprinkle it into the soil, work it in a little bit, water that, and that will actually administer small doses of fertilizer over a course of a month or so.
Okay.
But again, follow the instructions.
That was a text, and that number, if you want to send a text to Julie, 81807. Let's go to the phones, see if we can't help some folks out. Dan is calling from Minneapolis. Dan, you're on with Julie.
Yes, good morning. Last night we had some company stop over, and in a matter of 15 minutes, we saw about a dozen Japanese beetles hop over the fence and right onto the deck. Our situation is we've got a classic American linden tree, which I'm guessing they're going after.
They like those.
And we just had a yard, new grass laid down.
Mm-hmm.
So here's our scenario. We've got a small dog that is very susceptible toward having to go to the university's vet hospital whenever there's any type of insecticides or pesticides.
Sure.
And so we're probably looking at an injection-based something for the tree. But as for the grass, you had just mentioned about keeping the grass blades taller in the summer. We read another article last night talking about, in terms of watering, that it should be flood-based watering, like a good 2-inch soaking, then leave it alone for at least 72 hours, and then another 2-inch soaking so that the water gets very deep to stop the larvae or whatever that those Japanese beetles are trying to lay in the grass. You have any perspective on that?
Well, as far as the injection of the tree, you want to be careful about that. And the reason for that is in some cases, you're talking about a systemic type application of insecticide into your linden. If it's a healthy tree, they can actually tolerate for a number of years feeding from Japanese beetles. So the tree is not going to die because the Japanese beetles have skeletonized the leaves. That's the first thing. And that's true of many plants, as long as they're healthy plants. You know, they're good sized. But what you usually are going to inject that plant with is some kind of an insecticide that will not just affect the Japanese beetles, but will also affect pollinators. And that is a huge issue because lindens are very attractive to bees. And those residuals of that insecticide will remain in the tree for some time. And it's hard to say, you know, exactly how long, but you know, potentially you could be poisoning the bees next year when the tree blossoms. So you got to be really careful about what you choose to do that with. And most of them are going to be neonicotinoids, which are toxic to other beneficial insects. And those lindens are really desirable by pollinators. As far as the lawn goes, you do not need to water your lawn 2.5 inches every 3 days. In fact, the more moisture you put into the lawn, the better the environment for the grubs. You're actually making it a much better environment. Yes, it's true you should water deeply, but infrequently. And if you talk to Sam Bauer, who's our turf grass specialist, you do not need to water your lawn 1 inch every week. That's an old myth. You can water your lawn. You should water it when you start to see your footprints imprint in the lawn as you walk across it. Then it's time to water. Turf can take a lot of drought. It can take some dry conditions. And when you water it that much, that often, you're basically creating this fabulous environment for the grubs, and you're also kind of inviting your grass plants to just grow shallow roots because you got a ton of water in there. Why should they go any deeper? Mm. And then when we get into these droughty conditions, those are the plants that burn out because their roots are right at the surface. They've never had to go any deeper than that. So you do not need to flood your lawn. You want to water deeply but infrequently. And you also want to consider rainfall. I just had 2.5 inches of rain. That water is still in the soil. And you do not need to be flooding it with 2.5 inches every 3 days. That's a waste of water.
Okay.
So there's my – I'll get off my soapbox
okay,
now.
Very good. Well, we'll let you relax for a
while. Question to start with.
All right. Very good. We have to take a break, Julie. Hang on.
Well,
I did. I'm getting you a bigger soapbox, so don't go away. 72 is our Twin City temperature reading. We'll be back after the break here on 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Hall here, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. I beg your pardon. Has a lot of text messages along with callers. Should we help the callers first?
Yeah.
But, you know, before we do, let's give the website for.
So our extension site is extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab and go to Yard and Garden. You can also Google any topic and just put UMN after that, and you'll come across any publication or articles that we have. Sometimes that's easier because you kind of can dig down quickly and get to the articles faster. So either way is great.
All right. We'll mention that before Julie takes her leave today. Jim and Marshall has been waiting to ask a question. Go ahead, Jim. Thank you.
Good morning, Julie and Denny.
Morning.
I've got a long needle pine tree that's about 25 years old. It's about 12 inches in diameter at the base and maybe 30 feet tall or so in a residential location. The lower portion is really full, but this spring it dropped an unusually large number of needles, the long needles, and then had new growth come out, mostly to the top. It sort of looks like a poodle at the top and the regular tree at the bottom.
Okay.
You know, like the poodle cut?
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of woodpecker holes on it randomly, sure. Not in a pattern. And some of the newer portions, the newer growth, even in the bottom area that are maybe a quarter inch in diameter, starting to turn yellow.
Okay.
And it looks like they're dying. So I wondered if there's anything I could do or if it got attacked by woodpeckers or.
Well, the woodpeckers are there because there's insects there.
So, oh, insects.
Yeah. Okay. So they're kind of a, they're part of a. Usually when you see a woodpecker, it means that they're feeding. They're looking. They're hearing the buzzing or the feeding of the insects, and they're drilling into the tree because of that. As far as some pine trees, like you didn't say what type of pine tree, but if it's a white pine, I mean, both white pine and red pine drop their needles as a natural occurrence, but it sounds to me like there's something else going on. It's a little bit more dramatic for your tree.
Yeah.
And because it's a big tree, I'm a big fan of calling in a certified arborist. And
okay.
We've got an excellent publication on our site at extension.umn.edu. If you go to Trees and Shrubs, there's a publication on how to hire a certified arborist. And an arborist can bring a wealth of information and assess your tree properly in person. So that's what I would recommend with those mature trees.
Okay.
Yeah, don't want to lose a pine if you can't help
it. No, it's very, very large and very beautiful.
Right.
It's kind of funny. The top does look like a poodle, you know.
Yeah.
So you better get something done to it, I guess.
Yeah, have somebody come and take a look. You might have had some feeding, too, from sawflies. They like to feed on pines. And then they, you know, feed on the old, and then the new, you know, grows out, and it looks kind of funky. So.
Well, good luck with that, Jim.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Jim leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. Suzanne is calling from White Bear Lake. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. You know, Hello. First of all, I have a standard poodle. I never thought it looked like a tree. But
just the opposite.
I'm really offended.
I've never heard anyone say, my standard poodle looks like a pine.
Oh, Oh, she's so cute. Anyway.
That's classic.
Hey, my question is this. I live in a townhome area, and we have a very, very narrow backyard and a lot of box elders. And they were pretty much reaching over the top of the house, and the area back there, when it rains, it's very saturated. Little to no grass. Well, recently they sheared the limbs up and opened it up more, and that was great, but they also, the ground cover got cleared a little bit more than expected, and it was just this opening up to the backyard behind us that's pretty unsightly.
Okay.
So they have asked me to kind of put together a plan for what I would like back there, and what I'm thinking is some kind of pine tree. I like the real wide arborvitae, but I hear that deer like them too, and we do
yes.
have deer.
Yeah, they do.
Something that grows fast. I'm just a little bit at a loss. I had a friend that's a landscape architect, and she says that blue spruce, which they do plant around our community there, are diseased and not recommended by
right.
the use. So that rolls out blue spruce. So I'm wondering if there is a pine tree that we could put back there that would grow fairly fast and be kind of creating like a privacy screen.
Well, it sounds like it's pretty shady.
Yeah. Well, they did open it up a lot because
okay.
they trimmed up some taller branches and such. So we do have quite a bit more sun back there. But they would be put more in front of the
okay.
box elder, I would say.
So we have an excellent database for plant selection that you might want to start with. And it you can find it on the landscaping section of the Extension site, which is extension.umn.edu, and click on landscaping, click on garden, go to yard and garden, and then click on landscaping. And it's called the Plant Elements of Design. There's about just under 2,800 different plants on there, and there's a lot of different conifers, pictures of them. And then you can what I'd recommend is figuring out the maximum size that you want the plant to be. In other words, how much space do you have for it to grow? And then starting with that, along with the conditions, you can enter those into the database and click search, and it'll come up with any and all plants that fit. The other thing you can do, too, is on our trees and shrubs section, we do have some information on evergreens and also on other plants, too. So you might be looking at, there might be a combination of things. I would say don't just plant a row of evergreens, but mix in maybe some red twig dogwood. They look great in the winter. You might want to add a few ornamental grasses here and there so that you have a little bit more of an interesting sight than just a row of evergreens. I know that you want some privacy there, but if you do a combination, you're going to have a lot better kind of a more landscape type effect. And a little bit more natural, because we don't grow, hedges of evergreens don't grow in nature. And when you mix in some of those red twig dogwoods, you get that nice winter interest in there. So take a look at that database. And then you can always ask Extension. You could send some pictures on Ask Extension to ask an expert, and one of the master gardeners or myself can help you out with that. It's probably easier if we see some photos of it.
Yeah, good idea.
But yeah, take a look at the database.
Very good, Julie. We have to take our it's not going to be a half hour break, our bottom of the hour break. We have another half hour of the show to go. So if you missed the first half hour asking your questions, we'll have more time. If you find the lines busy, here's the number, 651-989-9226, or send a text. We have a bunch of those, 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show, brought to us every week by our friends down in Jordan, Minnesota, that make By the Yard outdoor furniture. We'll talk about that coming up in just a matter of minutes. Julie Weisenhorn's back with us in studio from the University of Minnesota, giving us that website.
extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, go to yard and garden. I'm sorry, I was reading a text and said, is it time to harvest garlic? And so I was thinking about harvesting garlic. And I'll just address that one really quick,
because sure.
they were one of the first people in. We have a really good publication on growing garlic. In fact, we have two of them on the Extension site. So I would recommend, if you're growing garlic at all, take a look at that. It's got really good information in it. But here, according to this information, you don't want to harvest too early because the bulbs will be too small. And normally, it's normally harvested between late June and late July. So we're right about in that time frame. And one indication is that when those lower leaves turn brown and the upper half will still remain green. So if they're starting to turn brown at the bottom of the leaves, you can pull them up.
All right.
Pick them up.
Very good. Thanks for that. Let's go back to the phones, Julie. Marge in Columbia Heights has been waiting. Marge, good morning.
Yes, Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 50-year-old maple tree, and all of a sudden, in the past couple weeks, I'm losing little branches about 6 to 8 inches long with green leaves on them.
Okay.
And the neighbor says it looks like a squirrel.
Yeah. Sometimes most of the time when I've seen that happen, it's been because of squirrels, that they're climbing around up there. They're active. They could be chewing on those leaves. And that's probably what it is. If they're green and they're not affected, the leaves aren't affected, it's probably an animal.
Yeah, I see that in my yard, too.
It could be big
thing.
Birds, you know, up there.
Yeah.
Messing around. I don't know.
So if they're green, they're
yeah,
solid green.
Yeah, they're... it's probably nothing to worry about. You have to clean them up. That's the only
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that's the work. Thanks, Marge. Appreciate that. Julie is calling from Rosemount.
What a
Julie.
Nice name.
What a great name. Hi, Julie.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question on daylilies and aphids.
Okay.
My daylilies are turning all brown. And there's little white bugs, and I think they're aphids. What do I do for them, or have I lost the plant?
Probably not. You probably haven't lost the plants. Daylilies are tough plants. I've seen a lot of some of the tried-and-true daylilies, like Stella's, turning brown right now. I talked to a friend of mine, Jim Calkins, who's a super knowledgeable guy. We've taught together for a long time. And we kind of conferred about it. And if you think about it, we started the year off with pretty fluctuating temperatures. We had some really dry, hot weather early on. And it could be that the leaves are just kind of, you know, they're just dying back, which is, you know, we were about 3 weeks ahead of schedule earlier this year. And so that could be part of the reason for that. But as far as the white bugs go, we would have to decide, we'd have to figure out what that bug is to see if that's causing it. I doubt that that's what's causing it. It might just be that they're now on the plant because the leaves are dying back and maybe they're decomposing insects. So you need to ID that. If you can get a picture of the bug, they're probably really small, you can send it to Ask Extension and we can see if we can ID it for you. Take a picture of your plant too along with it.
Okay, good idea. Thank you, Julie. Martha is calling from Monticello, I believe. Go ahead, Martha.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have at least a billion little grayish-white moths all over my flower garden.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly what to do. I don't know if they are destructive or what their next stage in life is. And if I spray for them, I don't want to kill the bees. So
sure.
If you can help me out.
Okay, so I would say if you can get a picture of them,
uh-huh.
That would be great because we want to be sure that we ID that. A lot of times you'll see, you know, a group of insects, soldier beetles are an example, where there's a lot of them, they've hatched out, or there's a lot of them at the time, and they're not an issue. So the best thing to do is identify them first. And so if you can get a picture and send it into Ask Extension, that would be great. You can also look at, if you can't get a good picture, you can also look at our diagnostic tool, What Insect Is This?
Right.
And see if you can find a picture or a couple pictures, and then we can, you know, help you decide that. But if you can get a photo, that'd be great.
I don't usually do this, but if I do spray, at a time when the bees are not out at dusk or in the evening, and the spray is just killing the insect on contact, will it hurt the bees?
I really strongly recommend you don't just spray because you don't know what that insect is. And that's the first thing of before you do any kind of treatment is you want to identify what that insect is. So don't you could spray with water. You could blast them with water. That's fine. But don't just go grab an insecticide and think that you may be spraying the right one because you could be doing more damage than good. So send us a photo if you can or blast those. If you see a lot of them on a plant, just blast them with water. See if that knocks them down at all.
Okay. Very good. I'll tell you, let's take another call and then we'll grab some text messages. Linda is calling from Minneapolis. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I have ferns that have been established for a number of years, and I just came back from vacation. We were gone for 2 weeks, and 75% of my ferns are dead. and I've got hostas in front of them. The hostas are fine. The impatiens are fine. But my ferns are dead.
Are they brown or are they yellow or are they flattened?
They're brown, like dead to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are they broken? Are the fronds broken? We had a lot of heavy rain.
Okay.
I have a planting of annual flowers out front, and they're flattened down from the rain. So it could be that they were flattened down and they broke or bent?
Well, I suppose that's a possibility. They are covered with some shrubbery. They're kind of underneath some trees there.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's a possibility. It just seems, I mean, they've been established for so many years, and just all, I mean, they've literally just dead.
Yeah, so it could be that we've also had some really hot, dry weather for a little bit while you were gone, and that could be part of it, too. So it's just a fluctuation. It could be that it's just, you know, that they have just died back now. They do start to die back if they're ostrich ferns, which I'm kind of guessing they might be. They're real big ferns, and those do die back and turn yellow toward this time of year. So as we get, and we've had this really hot, windy weather in the recent weeks.
Okay. Tell you what. Let's thank you, Linda. We hope that helped. Let's try to pick up on some text messages,
okay,
Julie, if we can, because we got a ton of those.
Ooh, here we go. Can I eat black walnuts? Well, you can, but they're really, really hard to crack. Their shells are very, very hard. So I don't think it's worth it to try to eat them, actually. I think it's really tough. Transplanting lupins, are there any tricks to moving them? They are a little bit difficult to transplant. You might want to start with some seed, or you might want to start with some new plants. You could add some new color in, perhaps. Looking to purchase a lodge up north on a heavily wooded lot, how much area would we need to clear to get some grass? Well, that's really going to depend on your exposure and how much grass you want. So you need to just look at that area, and you're going to want to grow probably a fescue mix up there because it's going to be drier and it's going to tolerate the sandier soil.
How about sunshine? Sunshine,
you're going to want at least about minimum of 6 hours of full sun for grass. Fescue is a little more tolerant of some shade, so you could do even a part shade there.
Okay.
Planted rudbeckias this year. Should I deadhead them? Yes, you can deadhead them, and they may flush out a little bit more bloom. And then covering them in the winter, you don't really have to. They're pretty tolerant of our cold winters. Should I avoid preen? Well, preen is a pre-emergent, so that's different. So pre-emergence will prevent seeds from germinating. If you put preen down, any of the seeds that have that are left and fall from those seed heads will, of course, not germinate. So, yeah, I guess if you want those seeds to fall and to germinate, then you would avoid preen. And let's see, if you were to overseed, improve your lawn quality, what type of grass seed is best to use in this region? Thanks. There's a lot of different types. And if you talk to our turf grass folks like Sam, he will say you get what you pay for in grass seed. So you go cheap, you might not get very good quality grass seed. And you want to understand the site that you have, moisture content in your soil, sandy or clay. You also want to look at the amount of light that you have and then choose a grass seed. Fine fescues are his two thumbs up kind of grass seed because they're drought tolerant, they're a little shade tolerant, they're low nutrient requirements, they have a little different look than Kentucky bluegrass, so you could overseed and have a good mix going on. They also don't green up quite as fast as Kentucky bluegrass.
Okay.
Somebody's asking about the beetles. They're devouring my apple tree. Chances are, yes, those are Japanese beetles. They're big, fancy beetles. They have a copper back. They've got five tufts of white hair along their abdomen and the back end. And they are big, and they're relatively slow. So they're actually quite easy to pick off. I had good luck on my grapevines actually spraying them down with water first to kind of stun them, and then I was able to really grab them pretty easily. Mm. So,
all right. Tell you what, let's take a break, Julie. We have more. I know you've got more text messages to talk to and talk to folks on the phone as well. So everybody stay where you are.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Wise on from the U of M is here.
Whew.
And
yeah.
Busy hour.
It is.
Do you want to go back to the phones first?
And then
it's up to you.
Sure.
All right.
Folks have been waiting a while.
They have been.
Like,
John is calling
patient.
From Savage. Thank you, John. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I've got a purple ash that's about 15 years old and a good canopy on it. Inside the canopy are small dead branches. Is that normal? And then if they, it is normal, can I trim those now or do I have to wait till the fall?
You could trim those now. That's fine. And you will see some die back a little bit. It's when the larger branches start to, when you start to see more die back, that you want to be concerned. If you're thinking that you might have emerald ash borer at all, I don't know if you've treated the tree at all. But you can take a look at the Minnesota Department of Ag website. They have awesome stuff on EAB.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, it's been treated. So
okay.
Just small branches.
Yeah, they might just be little twiggy dieback stuff.
That's what it looks like,
yeah.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Kevin is calling from Waseca. Go ahead, Kevin. Thank you.
Yes, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I have a couple questions in regard to the lawn. First, I picked up some fertilizer on sale. It's classified as winterizing fertilizer. It's high in nitrogen. I was wondering when would be the best time to apply it. And secondly, I also plan on spraying the lawn for dandelions and broadleaf. I would probably spray first and then put fertilizer on. When would be the best time to spray? Thank you very much and have a good day.
Great. Good questions. First of all, one of the things about spraying anything or treating your lawns is at this time of year, as I said a little bit earlier, you don't want to be necessarily applying fertilizer and bumping your lawn into active growth. Right now it's in kind of a dormant state. And also we have to be careful with spraying anything because when you start to spray herbicide, you can they can volatilize in really hot weather. So you got to look at you got to watch the air temperature. Like this would be not a good day to do it. Very humid. It's going to be a hot day. What happens is when that herbicide volatilizes, it can actually affect other plants nearby, like shrubs and trees. It actually the fertilizer becomes almost like a gas and can affect other plants. So you want to spray at the right time of day and the right temperature. Fall is the best time to fertilize because that is when the plant is actively growing. The lawn is actively growing. And I'm going to refer you to our lawn care calendar, and it's on our lawn care site. It's on the extension.umn.edu, and go to garden and yard and garden, and then go to the lawn section and go to lawn care. And it's a great calendar. It will tell you exactly the best time of year and second best time of year to do things as far as lawn care goes. Fertilizing, aerating. I see somebody had a question about when should you aerate your lawn. It also has good information on weed control, both pre- and post-emergent. And so I would say take a look at the calendar, print it out, put it on your refrigerator, and then you can use that as to help follow the timing for caring for your lawn. Also, whatever chemical or product that you buy, be sure to read the package. The frequency, in other words, how often you apply it, and the rate, how much you apply, are really critical to successful lawn care. So be sure to follow that. Get a spreader, you know, invest in a good spreader and calibrate it correctly. Learn how to do that. And then buy a product that's best for your lawn and apply it at the right time and at the right rate.
That is a good guideline, though.
Calendar is one of my favorite go-to because I don't remember all this stuff. You know, I have to go look at things. As far as the aerating goes, there's a really good thing to think about. Aerating your lawn is best done in the fall. And the reason for that is if you aerate it now or in the spring, you can you have a lot more weed seed germination. In the fall, you don't.
All right. Good idea.
Fall is the best time to do 90% of what you have to do to your lawn.
Let's take one more lawn question, and maybe we'll grab some text messages. Kristen is calling from Crystal. Good morning, Kristen.
Hi.
Hi.
Our city tore up the roads. They were laying new roads, and then they tore up our yards. But they put down new dirt and new sod where it was torn up.
Okay.
A lot of our lawns that are facing south are getting burned up.
Sure.
And looks burned up. And so we've called the city, and they said that we should water, keep watering it a lot. And you were saying just an inch a week?
That is for the inch. Well, the inch a week has been an old rule of thumb for existing lawns. These are lawns that are already in place. Sod is different. Sod, you're trying to establish a root-to-soil contact. And so you do need to water that sod and keep watering it. Do not let it dry out.
So that could be done every day then.
That should be, yeah, that should be kept moist. You have to, it's so that those plant roots will start, you know, leaving the sod and getting into the soil below.
Okay, good. Do you want to grab a text or two? We're almost out of time.
Okay, sure. Somebody is asking about some storm damage and many branches on our trees have been broken. Is it okay to prune those off now? Can we prune them? Do we recommend treating the cut with anything? Thank you. Stephanie from Hamburg. You can prune broken branches. In fact, you should prune those off. But you shouldn't treat them with anything unless it's a time of year that a plant is susceptible. Case in point is oak trees. Our time not to prune oak trees is between April and June. And that is because oak wilt is very prevalent at that time. And so there you would treat that with maybe a latex paint. But when you talk to foresters and arborists, you do not treat those cuts. Research has shown that the tree actually heals better without a cut treatment. A wound treatment is called.
Okay. How about another one?
Let's see. We have so many here. Somebody is asking about bronze colored beetles on my river birch. Yep, that's it, Tom. That's those are most likely Japanese beetles. And they do, you don't need to worry. Just keep that tree healthy. Make sure that it doesn't, you know, that it, you just keep it watered. Trees need a lot of water in this time of year, especially. And river birch have roots very close to the surface. So you want to keep that. Mulch the tree as well. That helps as well. I have tiger lilies that are doing what the fern caller mentioned. For the last two summers, they start out great and die off by now. Well, they've probably finished blooming, and they will start to die back as they age. So you can cut back the seed heads from those plants, and they are just going to naturally start to turn yellow. And then when they get pretty lousy looking, you can cut them down all the way.
We have... Oh, just about 60 seconds to go, Julie. Maybe we could back up a little bit and mention that guide for the when to do your garden or lawn and lawn.
Oh,
work.
The calendar.
The calendar, yeah.
So this is the lawn care calendar, and you can find it under our lawn care section on the website. We also have one under the flowers section, too, for flower gardens as well. But lawns are a little trickier. There's a lot of timing that people want to know about. So, again, the best time is rule of thumb for a lot of things like fertilizing and aerating lawns is in the fall when the plants are actively growing.
And if you want to get on a great website just to have fun reading.
Yeah, go to extension.umn.edu, click on the garden tab, go to Yard and Garden. If you did not get your question answered, we encourage you to send it in to Ask Extension. It's right on that garden page. So just scroll down, click that on. You can send in up to 3 photographs and Master Gardeners or I will be answering your questions.
And when next will the abiders be playing?
Well, we're on a bit of a hiatus right now.
Well, it's summer.
Yeah. But we'll be at the Tonka Brew Fest November 4th.
And you'll be
put
at
that
the
on
state
your calendar.
And we'll be at the state
and
fair,
we'll be
too.
At the state
doing
fair.
The
I'll
state
be
fair.
Back next week.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Good to see Julie Weisenhardt.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus, the next generation of advanced trading from Fidelity. Customize your tools and charts and access them seamlessly across desktop, web, and mobile. For faster trades anywhere you go. Try the all-new Fidelity Trader Plus. Learn more about our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/traderplus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.